Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
As of right now, we are at war.
How desperate you call on such lost creatures to defend you.
How desperate am I? You threaten my world with war. You steal a force you can't hope to control. You talk about peace and you kill because it's fun. You have made me very desperate. You might not be glad that you did. There was an idea to bring together a group of remarkable people, see if they can become something more. The battles that we never could.
Welcome to Furious Finest, a podcast about Marvel Crisis Protocol and the Marvel Universe. My name is Jesse Aiken, and I'm joined by my co-host, Chris Bruffett. How are we doing today, Chris?
Well, Jesse, I'm pretty excited to be doing a Marvel Universe show. We haven't been able to do one of these in a long time.
Yep.
Partially due to our own schedules and partially due to Disney. Just leaving it there.
Both those things, absolutely. And also, AMG just constantly giving us stuff that, like,
that's true.
Like,
that's
okay,
true.
As much as we want to talk about X and Y, Miss Marvel, great fun Disney Channel romp show, where this thing has come up that's actually very important, and then it's there it goes, the window is gone, you know. So we're not missing the window on this one. It's X-Men 97, and it's a very special moment in time for a myriad of reasons, but most importantly, if you guys have been following the show this whole time, a very special moment for Chris and I being X-Men fans, but also X-Men 92 fans.
We're both 80s babies.
That's right.
Need I say more? But no, it made sense. It was a Saturday morning cartoon that really captured both of our imaginations and really helped lead us down this nerddom path. Not the sole reason we're both nerds. It just helped. And it's really nice to watch X-Men 97, to see its legacy handled with such care. We just have to talk about it. Not to mention, it's having a moment in pop culture as well.
What a beautiful moment it is. I mean, X-Men are back. That's a moment in itself.
X-Men are back.
X-Men always have their big moments in time, and it seems like they've been quiet for a while, and for them to be back at the forefront like this is, frankly, amazing.
It makes me really happy. Mostly because we're getting to see a revival of all these characters in the comics that have just been gone for so long. I'm almost through the Hickman Krakoa era X-Men catch up. And so I'll be able to start the Dugan run about when the Dugan run finishes in real time. So that's going to be really nice. But we don't get all this without this moment that the X-Men are having that really all began with Disney getting the X-Men rights back, winning them. It's almost as confusing as the X-Men chronology.
Well, that's why we're here. Now, Disney to have X-Men fully now is pretty crazy, and through the lens of they've shown how they're continuing the original canon of the X-Men live action stuff, specifically with 92 to 97. But with Deadpool soon on the horizon, they are opening the door to passing the torch of new actors.
Really feels like that's what we're going to be seeing with the Wolverine and Deadpool movie. We're getting a version of Wolverine that's going to be in the comic suit.
Yeah.
We're getting Well, I guess I should say we're going to see how Disney is going to handle this R-rated property. They've said they're going to let it stay the same way, but you know, we'll see. I believe that they will, but we still have to see what happens.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing with Deadpool is it's a partnership, right? So they're more willing to do that, I think, as opposed to like Blade, which is a brand new original Disney Plus series or something, and then they're scared in the edges. They shouldn't. Blade should be fully what it should be. We'll see.
Not many successful PG-13 movies out there, that's all I'll say.
Well,
not many.
The Avengers movies, come on. But yes, I know what you mean. The downgrading is not great. It's obvious that a lot of these properties suffer from it. Look at Venom and stuff, right? Where it's like, you can't bring Carnage on screen in a non-R-rated movie, right? But they did that.
No, they tried. That's not Carnage. That's not Carnage.
That's not Carnage, no. So it's close, but it's not close enough. So it's a type of thing where I'm curious, and I'm also curious too, like with this X-Men 97, I'm sure you've noticed, Chris, watching the show, but it is, by the MPEA standards, it's a higher grade of age bracket, right? As it should be. And they've shown that through myriad of ways. And I love that they're like keeping the Saturday cartoon vibe, but then there's of course an edge to it.
There's a little bit of an edge to it. I think the X-Men 92 show had a little bit of an edge to it as well.
It did.
For the time. Children oftentimes do not pick up on all of the adult aimed edge. I know I didn't, but I thought I did, and I thought the show was better for it. So this whole discussion leading to this point about how comic book movies have lost their way, and I'm not a fan of just about any of the X-Men Fox movies personally. That doesn't mean you can't be or you can't like them. No problem with that. Logan is the best superhero movie ever made, though, right next to Into the Spider-Verse, but all of this discussion is to lead into why X-Men 97 is so good and why it is having a moment is because it is true to the property that came before it. It is true to the comic book characterizations of these characters.
Yeah.
All the way up to Wolverine is short. Thank goodness.
Yeah, yes.
I mean, there's a couple of scenes with him and Jean facing each other on the same screen in a close-up. He is demonstrably shorter than Jean. It's fantastic. I love short Wolverine. He's just the most dangerous because of it's just all great. He's fantastic. But the fact that they kept true to these comic book narratives and characterizations really is part of a major part of why X-Men 97 is so successful. But Jesse, before we really dig in here, I think we've got a little business to take care of.
Absolutely. Curious Finance is supported by Mr. Laser at mr-laser.square.site, your number one resource for everything Marvel Crisis Protocol, Star Wars Shatterpoint, and more. Use our code FURY5 to get your pre-orders placed with Mr. Laser. Get them right on time in the mail. And now's the perfect time to do it. Pick up your Spider-Foes boxes, maybe your Gwinnem and Ben Reilly boxes, and use our code FURY5 to get 5% off.
And here at Fury's Finest, we are big proponents of marked mats, and no one makes better marked mats for MCP than iWarGame. Please give them a look at iWarGame.net and do not forget to use the checkout code FFPODCAST to let them know we sent you and, you know, to get a cool little discount as well.
Yeah, 10% adds up, especially if you're buying several mats at once, which we highly recommend doing, and get that 10% off and get that to your local game nights right away.
Absolutely.
Our patrons also support Fury's Finest and support us here at patreon.com/Fury's Finest. If you enjoy our show, brings value to you anyway, and you want to be part of our community and actively help keep the show going, check out our Patreon tiers on that page and get access to our private Discord community. We take this time to thank all of our patrons for their support. I will say it's probably last call for the next league. So if you've been on the fence and you want to join our league, our TTS league, now's a great time to jump in. Get in our Patreon and jump in the league. We'd love to have you.
Absolutely. I cannot wait to get beat by you.
Come on in. And of course, Chris, we are getting through the backlog of patrons, which is wonderful. And we'd love to shout out a bunch of names that are patrons of the week this week. We've got Gian, Max, John, Christopher, Andy, and Zach. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you guys. We really, really do appreciate it. And as always, A huge shout out to our Avenger level producers, Sean J. And I am very, very happy to announce a new Avenger level producer, also a Sean L. So Sean L, welcome aboard. Thank you so much. Super excited to have you here, man.
Huge shout out to Sean L and Sean J holding the fort down.
Oh yeah.
Sean L has been a patron for a long time and just decided to up his pledge, went straight from the bottom, straight to the top, you know, from a SHIELD agent all the way up to an Avenger producer. So
very amazing. Greatly appreciated. Yes.
It feels like it's like Hawkeye's story, you know, and it's very exciting. And now there are two of them. And thank you, Sean's, for both what you do. But Chris, we also have a new exciting thing to announce that we've never announced before. We have a new executive producer, director of SHIELD themselves, AJ B. Thank you so much, AJ. And now you're going to hear AJ's name every episode because AJ is the director of SHIELD, of this entire program, and it is Director AJ.
Director AJ to you, Director AJ to me. Director AJ, thank you so much, man. It's truly incredible. We cannot tell you how appreciative we are.
Yeah, you guys are phenomenal. I mean, we talk more about this stuff in After Dark and everything, but I mean, the fact that we have two new producers within the span of a couple of weeks is just
pretty wild.
Incredible. And then Sean has been holding the fort down this whole time. And so you guys not only actively help support the show, but you guys are helping us pay a lot of our bills to make the show happen. There's a lot of things that we have to pay monthly and things to do behind the scenes to make the show the quality we want to make it. And the producers are actively helping us do that in the most active way, obviously. So it means a lot. And you guys are going to hear their name every episode.
Get used to it.
Get used to it. So thank you to the Sean's and AJ. But we got to get into our main topic today, which is X-Men 97. So excited, Chris. We've kind of already started the topic, which is phenomenal. But spoiler alert, if you haven't seen X-Men 97, we will be talking about episodes 1-7 today. We will not be covering episodes 8, 9, and 10 because we will be doing those in another episode regarding the finale, right? And giving the finale its proper breathing room like we want to do.
3-part finale, which is very exciting. I have some ideas on where it's going to go and who it's going to center around, but I don't really want to say it.
Yeah, yeah. No spoilers. Yeah.
And there's something we need to talk about up front when it comes to the show, and that is the showrunner has been fired. We don't know what for, so we don't know, did he just make Disney mad or is he a bad person? We're not sure. So when we're talking about the directing and everything, understand we are just talking about the skill and
yeah.
Product that we're talking about here. We're not going to try and be deifying anyone or trying to make anyone seem more important because of their skill, because we quite frankly do not know if, you know, what went on there with Bo and Disney. So let's just keep it surface.
Absolutely. So let's get right into the show itself. So X-Men 97, of course, continues the story starred in X-Men, the animated series, which has now been monikered X-Men 92, but it's really X-Men, the animated series. We kind of left off on a cliffhanger of sorts, Charles Xavier dying, I say in quotes, an assassination attempt. And he's taken to be healed by the Shi'ar from his injuries. And we see the end of that show, Magneto kind of turning over a new leaf a little bit. And we jump right in the action. We're full 97 soap opera style drama, exploration of all the mutant topics we love so much, and character continuation. So what I love about this show is it's a continuation of what was started in the previous shows in regards to character arcs, but it's also just a good place to learn about the characters. Say you're new to X-Men. The show's doing a really good job, as Chris said, of being truthful to the characters themselves and conveying that to the audience, even new audiences.
Absolutely. Let's take episode 1 for example.
Yeah, let's start talking about it.
Sunspot is introduced, Robert DaCosta, right away. And though Robert DaCosta and Jubilee in comics never interacted in this particular way, you know, both the only two students, not really members of a team, anything like that, you know, and just a lot of one-on-one time, it was very true to Roberto's character. You know, one of his superpowers is being rich, you know, and he doesn't particularly relish his superpowers all the time. He's a little bit ashamed of being a mutant at first. So this is all carried across immediately with Roberto. And though it's not lifted directly from any comic storyline, the characterization is just right.
Well said, Chris. And that's what makes this interesting, right? If you get the characterization just right, putting these characters in new situations we've not seen in comics yet, who they are is still going to come through. I mean, we've seen a lot of exploration in the show of someone like Cyclops, right? So Chris and I have voiced our opinions about Cyclops over the years on this show. And we also think he's probably one of the most crucial pieces in the entire mutant ethos for good reason, but we can still say we don't like him, you know? And what's funny about this show is, especially as it goes on, and I'm not going to give too many spoilers, but the things that I love and hate about Scott are really shining through. And the show's doing a really good job at highlighting both his positive and negative traits, especially more as the show goes on. And I will say right out the gate, Chris had a conversation off mic, or man, episode 1 and 2, are they making Cyclops just too cool and too likable? And then as the show goes on, you start seeing more of his militant.
The real Scott shows up.
The real Scott, not just the cool anime Scott, who's just owning people. And which, by the way, Chris and I love Scott's power set. And let's talk about this first fight where he's saving Robert DaCosta. He's punching guys and then shooting his optic blast to launch himself backwards to dodge punches from other guys, you know, and things like that. And then, yeah, it's very good.
That is something that the show has done really well throughout, and that is exploring how some of these power sets would be used in actual, you know, hands-on combat more than just what is shown on a comic book page. A comic book page can't show Scott using the concussive blast to push himself backwards to avoid a punch.
Yeah.
That's just not easy to do in the medium, especially when you're talking about Marvel and DC time crunches. These books have to be out quick. They've got to be drawn quicker. You're not going to be able to properly show that. And not just using the animated medium, right? But exploring it in their own mind's eye, the show creators, because when he does the high altitude, you know, basically a halo jump.
Yeah.
And uses his optic blast to slow his momentum so he doesn't need a parachute, and he just lands like he's Black Widow jumping out on this onto the ground or something.
Honestly, more of a believable than Black Widow in the live action, right? Where she's
but
doesn't break any bones.
But ScarJo forever, dog.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, man. This is not the only character they do this kind of thing with.
No.
They're constantly exploring power sets and how they would work in these fights and how they would work together in ways that haven't always been explored in the comics, or maybe they're showing something from a more obscure team up or comic or something. And it's very cool. And I will say, though, sometimes the animation comes off a little rushed and sometimes the background characters are a little still. For the most part, the animation in the show is really good. And I really warmed up to it when I made the realization that the fight scenes are actually top notch.
Yeah. It's very much the Dragon Ball Z approach, where it's put all your money and the fight scenes and obviously more frames and everything, right? And that's just going to take more money.
100% there's more frames than the fight scenes.
And then there's higher detail too, right? And there's obviously more dynamic camera framing and also stylistic choices referencing Dragon Ball Z and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of manga influence in this. And it's very cool to see not only an improving of animation over the last literal 30 years since the show incepted, but also the fact that these people are very happy to wear their influences on their sleeve and also just showcase the world of animation, because the soap opera stuff is very soap opera. It's very still, but the second the action begins, we could be jumping from multiple cultures, animation styles, and pretty seamlessly too. If you weren't necessarily a fan of these other animation styles, you might just sneak in and say, that was a really cool shot. But some of them are direct references and others are just homages because they love the stuff they worked on. And a lot has happened in the world of animation since 1990. A lot has happened.
A lot, especially in the West.
Yeah, think of just like the introduction of anime to the West in full from the 80s to now, right? I mean, we were at a certain point and then now it's just like, it's just normal, right? Like anime is just like widespread in the sense of you had to really dig for it in the 80s and early 90s, and then mid 90s onward, it's just been kind of like a wildfire, you know, and obviously more accessible now than ever before.
That's true. Though, I mean, you have to give props to the early Disney animation.
Of course.
That stuff still holds up. You watch it now and it still looks amazing, truly. But since then, yeah, especially Western based, there was a lot of cool shows, but the animation never really developed much.
It was less about the animation, some of those shows, right? Like a lot of the really successful ones.
So to see what's going on in these fights, it's really great. They're so well done. They're interwoven very, very well. The whole show is interwoven really well, but I'll get to that point in a second. But the fight scenes especially, I think the animation is just fantastic. The colors are always just popping wonderfully, beautifully. And it's just, it all works. And the fashion choices.
I know.
It is 97 as
I love it.
More 97 than 97.
Of course.
So that's how it's
gotta
man.
Be. This is an alt universe of 97 anyways. And it is so good. No, the fashion is really on point in the sense of it's completely in line in universe, not only in universe of the 90s, but universe of the X-Men universe, right? That is a very cool time.
The X-Men love playing dress up.
Oh, and they're good at it too.
Shadowcat being number one.
Oh, of course. So some really good stuff in it. And getting back to the action, Chris, another thing I love about the action is the action also informs character. Case in point, one of the first fights at the end of episode one, we see Beast like climb inside a Sentinel, right? And start rewiring it. These are all things to tell the audience, whether old or new, this is a skill set this character has, or this is a character flaw they do or don't have, right? And it's not just the action's cool, but it's like also telling you about the characters as well. Like Beast getting inside a Sentinel and rewiring it and driving it for a bit, Beast can do that. But someone new to the show might not know that, or someone like, or it could have just, Beast could have just destroyed the Sentinel and moved on. Like they would have done a lot in the old show in particular, because of, ironically, in the old show, they would frequently do the inverse. They'd put less time into the action. They'd repeat frames and stuff in order to give new characters or backgrounds for a new episode or new locations. But so maybe Beast would do the same side swipe to a character, but it's a different character and he's positioned differently. You know what I mean? But they're using the same animation. Very different in this show. So that's just one example. There's so many more of the power sets informing like the way those characters think and fight and who they are as well. I don't think a single like move is wasted, because not only are we getting new moves, but we're getting like Bishop, for instance, his power absorption ability is used 3 or 4 different ways, completely different ways, completely different drawn and camera angles as well. And so it's just, they're really showing a lot.
They're showing a lot quickly and they're moving the plot very quickly.
Yes, yes they are.
Don't blink.
Don't blink. If you watch episode 3, it is all gas onward from that moment on.
Well, there's not a wasted scene in this show. No, scene that's
part of it.
Every scene is short and every scene means something to the overall plot or a particular character's plot. But yeah, it moves quick.
I love it. So we talked about that first episode, a lot of action, a lot of getting Jubilee and Robert as our student POV characters. Once again, we did Jubilee the first time. Sentinels are back, possible master mold. But now we're on to the second episode and Magneto's in the picture. And this is a big thing moving forward, is Magneto's role in this story.
They're very much exploring the Magneto that led, what all teams did he lead in the 90s in the comic books? He had the New Mutants for a second, right? I don't think he led the big team. But they're very much exploring this Magneto as the torch holder of Xavier's dream.
Yeah.
Xavier's no longer around to be that shining light, and Magneto is taking this challenge from Charles to try to be that shining light.
Yeah.
And he, varying degrees of success, but this is very much the proper characterization of good guy Magneto. This is him.
One of my favorite characters of all time. It's good guy real. Magneto.
Magneto's one of the best characters in modernity. Like he honestly is.
For
so
sure.
Complex, so many different angles to look at the character. He's been involved in so many things with a propensity to monologue,
yeah,
a propensity for flowery language, for big thinking. That lends itself very well to an idealistic villain and an idealistic hero. And his willingness to hardline things adds that action, you know, militant aspect that shows like this need. He's willing to fight for his dream, or Charles's dream at this point.
Yep. And I think he's also come to realize through the events of X-Men 92, just some of the floating canon out there that's perceived through this Magneto, things he's saying as he comes out, that maybe he was wrong, right? In a lot of ways, but it's not so much that he was wrong in his idea. It was his execution, right? Which is what,
correct.
Which is always what's so fascinating about Magneto. Cause we know that, we know Magneto's right. It's his methods, though, he goes about sometimes where he's absolutely wrong, right? but mainly right, at least from the X-Men perspective, which is who we are when we watch the show. We're from the X-Men perspective, though we are human ourselves watching this, which is such a fascinating thing this whole X-Men universe does, which was why we keep coming back to it time and time again, Chris and I, and we love it so much. But I think the second episode, Chris, Mutant Liberation Begins, when it came out, first of all, I watched it twice. And I also was like, this to me is peak X-Men canon content to me, because it is showcasing the thesis of X-Men in full circle.
The X-Men bread and butter is being the other, being the outsider in society.
Hating what you don't understand.
Age old human thing, man. It is, if you're different, you're outside of the group. It's that herd mentality, wherever you think we got it from, it does exist. And it has been, it's very much, and it's a giant problem in even modern society. So the X-Men can speak to almost everyone because it's some aspect of almost everyone's life. They consider themselves an outsider, whether they are or not, but they do feel that way at times.
And see, this is what's fascinating about X-Men as a medium of fiction, of sci-fi, of fantasy. It's like the anti-Prime Directive in Star Trek, right? X-Men is. And not that it's anti. It's actually, X-Men is 100% pro the Prime Directive that Star Trek's trying to get to, right? Star Trek is hundreds and hundreds of years in the future where we finally got there, right? We finally got there. But X-Men is like, no. Humans, in particular, we have things that we fall back on because they're safe and familiar. And what's so powerful about this episode is, we've got this thesis of X-Men, what it is, the other, as Chris said, man. We've also got Magneto returning as good guy Magneto. And he's right in the middle of this. He's being charged for his crimes against humanity and his terrorism. But also, as this is happening, a mob of humans are trying to come and kill Magneto. And they can also come and kill the UN judges that are ruling on Magneto's case. And Magneto says, they come for you just the same. And it's very powerful. It's very powerful.
There's a lot of very powerful speeches in this show.
Oh, man.
There really are. There seems to be one or two just extremely poignant lines almost every episode.
For sure. Absolutely for sure. And also, this is a very important episode because it sows the seeds of doubt in the X-Men and Scott and his leadership, right? And Scott being like getting more to the militant Scott, you know, that he is deep down. he's a flavor of Charles, right? Scott certainly is. And all this is important because Storm losing her powers, almost being killed, Magneto sparing the life of the UN, but him is saying, don't let me let you down. As in like, mm-hmm. I'm this Omega level person. And I had a dear friend that asked me to be better, not only for mutant kind, but for humanity. And I'm trying to do better is what Magneto is saying, but don't let me let you down. Magneto sparing the UN, and then clearing him, and then the X-Men surviving the mob. But this is only the second episode in, and the tone of the world is set. The world we're in, it's a powder keg, right?
That's the second episode, and we haven't even touched on the B plots of either episode.
Not at all. Not at all.
So there's a lot going on. The soap opera is very strong with this show. We have clone shenanigans.
Logan Scott, Jean, love triangle, always.
Well, yeah, that was very prevalent in the X-Men 92, so it has to be here now. This is a direct sequel. You know, we get some Cable, a different take, a very abbreviated take on Cable's background.
Yep.
There's a lot going on. I feel like I can't say too much without spoiling the entire show.
Well, we did give an episode 1-7 spoiler warning, so, but you're right.
All right. Well, then let's just get to it. I mean, this whole B plot between Jean and Madeline Pryor is just...
Yeah, that's where we're at. Third episode, Fire Made Flesh anyways, where this B plot just fully takes off.
Right, right.
With Mr. Sinister and everything.
We've been presented a Jean this entire time, a pregnant Jean, as if she were Jean Grey, only to have the real Jean Grey show up.
Yes.
In the matter of one episode, the real Jean Grey shows up. Yep. Madeline Pryor goes full Goblin Queen, and then turn on Sinister, and Madeline Pryor kind of reforms herself and becomes Madeline Pryor. This all happens in 23 minutes or 30 minutes, whatever it is.
And Magneto fights the Goblin Queen and loses, which is wild.
Yes, he does.
Scott loses as well. Jean's the only one who can beat Madeline Pryor. Jean has to come in telepathically and defeat her, snap her out of it, but... Also, don't forget like the birth of Nathan, him being infected with the techno-organic virus immediately, and them having Scott, who's already like completely reeling from this not being Gene the whole time, has to say goodbye to his son and Gene as he knew her, I guess, per se. And the irony of this is we start seeing the kind of like angry Scott Moore come out. He's like, if we're going to send Nathan to the future, I can't be even part of this. I have to walk away. And he just walks away from that as they resolve that with Bishop and everything.
He has a propensity to do that.
Yes.
Just walk away from his personal life. Consequences be darned. I don't like him. I just don't like him.
We know, Chris. We know. I feel exactly the same. But
so there's a few things here. Gene and Madeline wrestling with identity.
Yes.
Is very poignant. I think Scott wrestling with this, I was in love with a clone, but it wasn't a clone, whatever it is very interesting.
Like it was Gene as I knew her, but she got swapped somewhere in the middle.
Right, but they have shared memories, shared experience, whether those memories were implanted or not.
No, this is good. I mean, we've been touching on some of this. We've been touching on some of this lately with, you know, even something as different but similar as Laura Kinney and Gabby Kinney, where it's like, what does it mean to be a clone? What does it mean to have shared memories or not? What does it mean? How much are you like the other person? Nature versus nurture. There's all these layers to it. And very confusing for them, and absolutely adds a massive layer to the soap opera element.
I mean, X-Men has always been a soap opera, and
100%.
This show is highlighting that. We've also got another love triangle with Gambit, Rogue, and Magneto.
Absolutely. So Magneto returning and them really in the animation lens, fully shedding light on Rogue's time in the Brotherhood, per se, you know, and
well, in this universe.
In this universe. It's not the Brotherhood itself. But you know what I mean. It's like her alignment with Magneto for years before the X-Men that they don't know about. They always do that in every universe in a different way. Yeah. And this way was not a Brotherhood of Mutants way, but more of just her knowing Magneto in the past life. But yeah, absolutely. I mean, very powerful soap opera stuff there where Remy, I mean, the guy is absolutely head over heels in love with Rogue. I mean, I think that was never a question in this universe, this version of X-Men, the animated series. And so that whole element of fully in love, but no physical connection. And what does that mean? And then somehow Magneto has the ability to, and in this canon, to hold Rogue's power sap back. So he can have physical connection with her.
It's really complicated. There's so much to it. It is a classic love triangle. And I do really enjoy the characterization of Gambit in this show. This is the Gambit I like. This is the Gambit that was my favorite character growing up.
This is the Gambit we fell in love with in the 90s because, I mean, they took liberties with Gambit in the sense of adaptation from the comic to the television series as well. I mean, he wasn't full scoundrel Gambit in that either. I mean, womanizer Gambit, to be more particular. He was not.
The 90s in comics were not nice. We're not good to Gambit. He was not very nice to his partners.
So similar to what they did on the animated 92 with Charles, it seems like they did that 92 with Gambit as well, where it's like, they're both nicer characters.
This Charles is not the bad guy.
No. And that's,
he's just naive.
Well, and I think that's always been 92 Charles. Yeah. It's been like that. So I think that's also why most of us, and I'm speaking for myself as well, think of that Charles and think of Patrick Stewart's Charles. And we're like, Charles is the good guy, Chris. He is the good guy, or he's just a little naive. Those are the main live action Charles that we have out there.
Live action Charles is not the character though. It is an adaptation of the character.
Absolutely.
Character Charles Xavier is an unwitting supervillain.
I'm just putting in a word for Gambit because in the animated series, he was better.
Yes.
And now he's way better. The animated
series.
He's
awesome, man. This is the full actualization of Gambit with the very 90s style chauvinism kind of gone. And in its place, what I view as a more true to what masculine is, and that is someone that understands that things can get complicated and that other people have choices and that you have to respect those choices, that physical might does not make right, that emotional strength is true strength, that those are what I view as real kind of masculine in a idealized sense, right? And he displays all of that in this. As well as a devotion to the woman he loves who might not share that same devotion to him.
Absolutely.
In a healthy way, though.
No, they both clearly love each other.
not comfortable, but it's not unhealthy.
No, no. I also fascinated by staying on this Gambit path because, you know, Chris and I both talked about this. Gambit is one of my favorite characters from the 90s and, you know, was back then as well. Part of it's low-hanging fruit because my Louisiana heritage. But, I mean, also all the things Gambit loves, I love, you know, because it takes me back to my family and, like, home-cooked meals and stuff, like, all the time.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to his, like, things he enjoys, like his food and drink preferences and stuff. And New Orleans is one of the greatest cities of all time. But I love the exploration of Gambit in the show, too, where he's frequently referencing himself as kind of like a street rat and that he's a sinner. And he's not saying in a hopeless way. He's just saying it is what it is. Like, mm-hmm. I really profound quote, you know, two of my favorite characters interacting, but I mean, Gambit and Nightcrawler, and Gambit being like, my life is full of crime and sin. And there's no love for sinners like me. And Nightcrawler, of course, with his profound everything, you know, he tells Gambit there's no love without sin, for love is best measured in what we forgive of others. It's very powerful because that is Gambit's arc, literally in pop culture, but also in this story, what he comes from and where he ends up. It's very important, you know?
Well, look, he's always going to be a thief.
Yeah.
He could be on Captain America's Avengers and he would still be a thief. It's not something he just stops.
No, but he's a hero. He chooses to be.
He absolutely is. And I guess that's part of the joy of exploring the Gambit character is, are these kind of, you know, small acts of sort of bad, depending on who he's stealing from, things like that. There's a lot of gray area. I'm not in my early teens anymore. I do realize there's a ton of gray area in the world. When I was originally consuming all these things, it was all black and white. You know, I was the smartest man in the world. It was a 12-year-old me. But
well, and I love her on this Gambit topic because it's completely organic. And I do know one of the last quotes of the original series was Charles Xavier talking to Gambit and saying, how many times must the scoundrel prove himself a hero before he actually believes it himself?
It's his own view of himself. He still sees himself as a thief.
More than a thief, I think he views himself, as he tells Nightcrawler, a true sinner, lowly person, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's got these amazing skill sets outside of his powers, which his powers are insane. And then he keeps doing these heroic things. He keeps saving his friends. And I think the Nightcrawler thing just nails it because he's saying that, you know, with having your past, your sin, in this example, you've chosen to be better and you're choosing to be the man you are today, which is actually what matters, right? And the way we see it as your family is what Nightcrawler's saying. It's very profound to me. I mean, but Nightcrawler quotes kind of are profound to me in general. You guys know this.
The good Nightcrawler quotes are just fantastic.
I mean, they're one in a million, yeah.
Well, the dialogue in the show is just, it's great. There are nuggets of wisdom in many characters. Nightcrawler, Storm, probably Magneto being the ones that really, really pop out to me. But those are also some of the characters that we've had kind of very centered episodes on. This show's doing a really cool thing and telling this bigger story through varying perspectives. Not every episode is 100% dedicated to a certain character. I think maybe only one episode is really that dialed in. And that would be the Roberto Jubilee episode.
It's not even dialed in because the back half of that episode is Storm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But each episode will kind of, the A plot or the one character you'll be seeing it away from the team, you know, that's kind of what denotes it being a little focused on them. And Storm has an incredible arc through seven episodes, just the highest of highs then the lowest of lows.
Yeah. Insane. I mean, just that first episode, getting back to the action a little bit, all the X-Men kind of having their backs against the wall. And then all the Sentinels saying Omega level threat detected. And Storm coming across that desert. Lightning hitting the sand and the sand actually instantly crystallizing like it does. And I'm just like, man, this is the beginning of the Storm arc. And I was not ready for the rest of this, Chris. There's a lot that happens with Storm's arc. And yeah, let's talk about Storm losing her powers and what happens after that.
That episode in particular, the one where she's wrestling with the demon while Forge is kind of out due to injuries from fighting said demon. Some very, very interesting topics. Some of the things that demon says makes me really think, you know, what is this really talking about? And it almost, I don't know. She's really struggling with being an outsider among outsiders in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And you can see that come through how the demon manifests her own self-doubt and her own self-loathing in its just verbal attacks on Storm.
Yeah. I mean, she's her own worst enemy, right? I mean, they even take it all the way to the demon, which is named the adversary, being played by the same voice actress, right? Who's played Storm all this time, and she plays the voice of the demon as well. Also a fun call out, because I know the adversary was from the 80s and tied to Forge and his Vietnam stuff and a lot of that tied to Forge's story.
And his Native American history.
Of course.
Ancestry is coming through on this one too.
Yeah. Oh yeah. A lot of that, which is long overdue to see in...
Well, and it being handled well and respectfully instead of the way it was in the 80s with like Thunderbird and things. It's just, it's nice.
Yeah. And so Storm eventually overcoming the adversary and realizing the power is still in her because she's Storm. She's goddess of Storm. She can't just have her power just taken from her like that because she is Omega level. And of course, getting that full Superman homage scene of the learning the flight and the X-Men 97 people did say, direct reference to Superman, which makes a lot of sense. And Man of Steel, that movie that Chris loves so much. But it's also her getting the black suit and the new hair and just signaling we are the next level of Storm as well. Because we're familiar with Storm getting the black suit and stuff in the comics and the change. It's signaling a change from 92 as well.
You know? And this, you're just getting me hyped for Storm.
I know.
We've got to get a second MCP Storm.
Please.
We have to.
Three threat
is not good. At least I'm fine with six.
I would prefer six as well. Yeah, that'd be pretty amazing.
If Magneto's a six, Storm can be a six.
You heard it here first, folks. We need that six threat. I think we've said that multiple times over the years, right?
But this is just making me really... But you could also do a two threat Storm when she's depowered in comics and, you know, hand-to-hand fighting for the control of the Morlocks and winning. Storm is such a cool character, dude.
Now, Chris, the irony of this is we're talking about all these characters' moments. Logan's had some really great moments, too. But something you and I were not talking about off mic, and maybe this is just because our Logan preference is showing in a lot of ways, but I feel like his part of the show is coming at the very end, and we're not there yet.
I kind of hope you're wrong. I hope we don't get a Logan-centric episode until season two. It's unlikely, right? Since the 90s, the X-Men have been seen through this Wolverine lens in pop culture. And it does wear on me, though. I love me some Logan. Okay. Don't get me wrong. One of my favorite characters. I do get tired of him. And I have been tired of him. For a while when I was younger, I quit buying any book with him in it because I was being a baby. But it is nice for him to be a member of this team, to be front and center, to have moments, but never to be the focus yet.
No,
to let these other characters shine before we get to the Logan. Come on. We had it in the 90s. Everything was Logan. It dies for a second and we are right back to it because of Hugh Jackman.
that's a huge part
because
of it. Yeah.
Because of how well he played that character. All of those movies became Wolverine movies.
Oh yeah. He became like the main character.
Of course, because he's incredible. He's awesome. He did a great job, but it wouldn't be bad to get things through different lens. That's all I'm saying.
No, and I think they've done a good job of that so far. It's just an interesting stylistic choice that I think is having intention in the story because Scott and Jean are featured so heavily. And to have Logan be featured less than some of the others, and obviously less than Scott and Jean, is an intentional choice, I think.
I think so too, but he'll have his day. He'll get his episodes. There's no way around it.
Has to happen. Now, it is cool the way they've also done Bishop left, Nightcrawler came in. Like, it's the way they're never hardcore overloading the main cast. Like, it's actually, I'm kind of shocked at how, in a good way, how refined they've kept all the character moments and how they're not getting wider and wider and wider and wider and wider. I'm sure it's going to continue to get wider as it goes on. But, you know, it's like Bishop left, Nightcrawler came on, Magneto and Gambit left, which we can talk about shortly. Nightcrawler got more screen time. It's just like the balance is very good.
Well, and Morph started to get more screen time too.
Absolutely. Just in general, Morph's been pretty all over the show. Morph is such a troll, by the way, just such a troll.
But Morph is a troll, but they're really digging at some stuff with his character, especially in that horror episode.
Yeah, he's a troll because he's
not that's comfortable
his defense
with
it. That's his defense mechanism.
He's not comfortable with himself. Yeah.
No, he's not comfortable with himself at all. So
poor Morph.
And it's been really cool to see Morph and Logan's like relationship throughout the show.
Best buds.
Yeah, a lot of good moments with them. I mentioned Nightcrawler coming in. Being the same actor who played Nightcrawler, of course, coup de grace there, but not a second of Nightcrawler time has been wasted. Every line, everything he's done, even now with episode 8, which we're not going to talk about today, Nightcrawler getting to fight finally, everything has just been not a wasted second.
He's been really great.
That means a lot to me because he's my favorite mutant, but also it means a lot because we're not wasting time and we're really emphasizing what matters about these characters. And, you know, Nightcrawler's not had a ton of screen time, but every bit of screen time he's had has been 100% Nightcrawler and impactful to who he is as a complex moral character. And you just keep saying that about every character.
That has rang true for every character on this show.
It is insane. So let's jump ahead to Genosha and talk about that.
Talk about episode 5, the big one, a Gambit episode.
Yeah.
And rightfully so. It is his swan song. He goes out on top.
I mentioned that line from Nightcrawler in that episode talking with Gambit, because a big framing of that episode, of course, is the love triangle. And Nightcrawler saying, you know, time to marry the Belle. Gambit, once again, thinking of what he thinks in his head about himself. I can't make it fully official with Rogue because she's cutting off all ties. You know, like he's still in that loop, you know.
Well, Rogue has an extremely poignant line to me earlier in this episode when she tells Gambit, your heart may beat for me, Remy, but I can't feel it. It just encapsulates the whole dynamic of that love triangle.
Yeah. And obviously that's really important by the end because we come full circle with Rogue and she realizes that her deep emotional connection with Gambit is actually, she thought she needed the physical and then the Magneto flavor of things. And she pursues that, doesn't work. And she realizes
she wanted to try her hand at being a queen, but ultimately I think she answers her own question in the quote I provided earlier. Magneto's heart does not beat for her. There's a lot. Magneto's got a lot going on for him. He seems like a very desirable man at this point in the story, but Rogue's probably she's the Southern Belle of the X-Men, you know, she's supposed to be one of the most gorgeous people in a team of gorgeous people.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that she's desired by these folks. But Remy truly, she's not wrong. His heart beats for her. His complete and utter dedication for her is shown on how he goes out in this episode. And his heart, period, is shown in how his demise, you know, comes about.
Yeah. And he dies content with the fact that he loved Rogue wholly. And they couldn't quite make it fully work. They just need a little more time, but that wasn't given to them. It is very cool. Before the end of that episode, you know, Cable coming, announcing time to get out, but he's too late. And then seeing his mom, seeing Madeline Pryor, were very powerful. Shout out to, you know, Emma and Sebastian being there and their full regalia and the party, which is very great. Very Hellfire, right? But it's the moment where Rogue realizes, like you said, that the power that her and Magneto both have as well. So let's factor that in. They are very powerful. That's unfortunately part of this, and that the spark is not there, but then she goes to find Gambit. He's nowhere to be found. And then the strike happens. And so it's cool to see her and Gambit team up, Gambit on the motorcycle and her flying, taking out Sentinels and rekindling that spark, you know, and then Magneto saving the two of them first.
Well, and that's another thing I really like about this show and goes back to the rehabilitation of Remy LeBeau.
Yeah.
As soon as this strike happens, there's no petty swiping. There's no back talk. There's no anything. It's just, how can we help? Are you okay? How can we help type stuff? And it's not until Magneto is seemingly sacrificing himself that emotions get involved. And of course that, you know, you're about to see someone you love die. That's going to affect most people. But Magneto does save both of them, almost in a way that says, forget about me, go be with each other. But unfortunately, that's not in the cards, as Remy is called to action. Not only does he save the moral, he saves everybody.
Right. And what's amazing about that, Chris, is like the full, you know, there's always these like if you are a deeper fan, there's these layers of powerful emotional connection to this. And a big part of that is, and a lot of storylines of this storyline, like Gambit has sold out the Morlocks. He has treated them lesser, like scumbag Gambit, especially,
most,
right?
Most of the X-Men have been rude to the Morlocks.
But Gambit specifically, and this has literally given them away. Like he's been like the rat, per se. So to
he led Sabretooth to the Morlocks.
To the massacre.
For the mutant massacre, right.
That's insane.
That's right. I mean, that's his personal hell is reliving that memory, right? So, right.
So this Gambit, though, it's like we're literally rewriting our pop culture history, too. It's not only did he not get the Morlocks massacred, he actually went and solo saved them himself while Magneto and Rogue were dealing with other Master Mold stuff, and then, you know, saved everyone.
The rehabilitation of Remy LeBeau. I said it before. It's true. I mean, this would be great if we can get this version of the character. And I know we've seen this version in comics before.
A lot.
But I do believe that this show will make this version a little bit more popular because it's got more reach than the X books have had in the last however many years. And, you know, Gambit's not really doing a whole lot in Krakoa. He's just kind of hanging out. He's on a team and it's cool, but they're not a forefront team. We'll get into it eventually at some point.
Also, how sneaky was the name of this episode? The episode was called Remember It. And it wasn't like said through that like classic quippy Gambit way, like name's Gambit, remember it. And he'd kill his enemies or incapacitate his enemies in the 90s a lot. And so just to be called Remember It, and that's how the episode ends, you know, with him saying that to the Master Mold Sentinel and sending all of his kinetic power through, saving everyone, like you said. Insane. Him and Magneto saved a lot.
It's true. Saved most of mutantdom in this episode.
Also, Magneto, like, kaiju fighting the Master Mold with train arms.
Him whipping the Master Mold back with a train.
Full kaiju fight.
Was such a cool thing. And I thought it was really neat how they showed that being the first kind of hits against the Master Mold that did anything and starting to show Magneto physically giving these other mutants hope.
Yes.
You know, that maybe they can survive this. I thought was very, very powerful.
Yeah. So we'll talk about the event as a whole, because just this event happening, I mean, I don't know why. We all know this exists in the canon, but it's like, I guess because of the animated series, I think a lot of us watching the show continued from the previous series, just thought this event wouldn't happen and that mutants would be safe. And not only to, this wasn't inconsequential deaths. We lost a lot of main mutant named characters, right? For a minute there, I thought we lost Nightcrawler because he bamfed to save Rogue and Magneto from a blast and he got scorched by the blast, but he bamfed out last second to not actually take the full blast, but he was out. Emma and Sebastian got crushed.
Oh, are they officially? I haven't seen any of the like officially, these guys are gone list, but
and there's still a lot done of, with the fallout in other episodes, right?
But there's a lot of characters
Battle and Pryor.
We just don't know.
Yes.
We do know that Gambit's gone. I do not believe Magneto is gone.
Right.
But it is a question mark. I do not believe Emma or I know Sebastian Shaw ain't dead. You can't kill that guy with anything like that.
He'll find a way. They showed all their bodies. They showed all their bodies. Let's say that in the shots.
We'll see. We'll see.
Some of them with tarps over their heads. But yes, yes.
I mean, they might be. They might be, man. I don't know.
In this universe, yeah, they might be.
It seems like they're okay with consequences in this show, but I don't know.
Yeah. Alongside that, we've got Jean finding her place back in the X-Men, Jean kissing Logan and Logan saying, you've got one, like this didn't happen.
That's a whole interesting thing in and of itself. I know that we're running up on our time here, but we haven't even talked about bad guys yet.
No.
But Jean losing herself for a moment in that moment, and then consequently discovering that Scott has been having
emotional connection.
Well, not just emotional. I mean, they're getting together in the shadow plane.
Yeah.
Yes. And, you know, doing the things that a couple does and had been for a month, you know, who's more at fault? Are they both equally at fault? Is it both stepping?
It's
where do you stand?
But yeah.
Where do you stand? It's an interesting question that the show asks that, there is no right or wrong answer per se, but everyone's answer is going to be shaded by their own experiences. And I think things like that are very good for shows to do.
Yeah. Logan's the only one who's innocent.
No. He was laying some pretty heavy game there.
He did a good job, though, of shutting that down immediately.
He did. But like I said, I'm of the opinion that Scott is very, very much in the wrong. And Gene made a boo-boo. And that's not to say it's not significant, but it was kind of a lost in the moment type of thing that ultimately really went nowhere. But she's definitely not innocent. You're correct. But man, Scott Summers is a jerk.
Scott Summers is a jerk. Also, this new actor playing Scott, incredible.
Pretty good.
I
pretty
nailed good. Not only the homage to the original voice actor, but also just nailing Scott, like what he thinks he is and what he is. So yeah, but so jumping ahead to the last two episodes, actually finding out that Charles is alive, he's safe with the Shi'ar Empire, and setting up way more stuff than I thought they would. I mean, Deathbird and just Gladiator.
I was so happy to see Deathbird. Deathbird is like she's my favorite Shi'ar character.
I was like, Chris is going to see Deathbird and Gladiator and freak out. That's what I was thinking. I watched
100%
this.
That's what happened.
Oh my gosh.
I love Gladiator's
power set and that.
You know, I love Gladiator.
I know you do.
I've got that little Greg Smallwood Gladiator he drew for me, man.
Yeah, that's so good. So this was a departure, especially after all the tragedy of Genosha, but very cool because this is very clearly not only setting up the end of season one, but probably more of season two.
Well, and it's funny you said that you saw that and said, oh, Chris is going to freak. And as soon as I saw Ronan, I was like, oh, Jesse's loving it.
100%. I think I stood up and I was like, no. Is that
Ronan? Yeah, man.
Yeah.
It's so cool how they have not been afraid to show other Marvel characters in this show.
Yeah, yeah.
But not make the show about them.
Yes.
It really feels like a shared universe through just these seriously 3-second snippets.
Right.
Five seconds of
said character being said character.
Yeah.
Like
really, really impressed with how the show has handled this business. There's just no fat. They have trimmed every little piece of fat, which is not a very Disney MCU way of being.
That's true.
You know what I mean? It's almost defined by pork belly, right? It's almost defined by fat. So it's a very, very nice departure. I truly do enjoy this show. And I was really looking for reasons not to. I do not like nostalgia. I do not like companies using nostalgia, weaponizing nostalgia against me for my money. Do not like it one bit. This show is fantastic, in my opinion. If it's not for you, I definitely get it. I wouldn't expect anyone that doesn't like the show to still be listening at this point, but I totally understand. Taste is taste. We are not the podcast that wants you to like pretend to like things you don't or capitulate to our proclivities, but this show is really well executed.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think I need to toe a line on this, Chris. Honestly, if you're interested in X-Men at all, but you never really have taken the plunge, this might just be the medium to do it. I mean, this is probably the most accessible, most distilled version of X-Men we've had for someone who's new, you know what I mean, to it.
Great word choice there. Distilled. That's what aptly put.
So I push back on you a little bit, Chris, and I say, no, you should watch it, is what I say to those people.
I think you should try it.
Yeah, try
and
it.
And if you've got the time,
maybe read
one of those summaries from the original series or a 10-minute YouTube video or something, so you know what's happened in this universe, so you're not completely confused on where the plot is with specifics. But even if you don't want to do that, the generalizations of the characters are so good, you'll be able to figure out what's going on. They make it obvious who bad guys are. It's okay.
So yeah. We're going to end this episode talking about the bad guys and kind of how Gyrick and Trask and
Sinister
are kind of all working
for
together, but they're all working for someone. Yes. And this is a route where they clearly wanted this first to 7 episodes to be the initial part and then the last 3 to be the end part. And so, yeah, let's talk about these bad guys and who are they working for, Chris?
Well, Sinister is my favorite bad guy.
He rules.
If it's not the original voice actor, it's extremely close.
Yes.
And it's awesome. The characterization, the way he just melts into shadows and materializes out of shadows, the way his voice will be coming from a certain apparatus, and then all of a sudden he's standing behind you.
Yes.
picking up where he left off from the baby monitor. I mean, it's horrific. It's sinister. Could you imagine seeing someone that looks like him in real life?
No. No.
Just that skin and that suit and those powers.
Yeah.
Just, oh my goodness. He is truly sinister. And this is the 90s version of sinister, where there is no kitsch. There's no humor, right? We live in a day and age where Mr. Sinister he's a high level bad guy, but he's also a joke because he's got a billion clones and some of them are more fabulous than others.
That's right. Yeah.
And
very fabulous.
I'm very partial to the fabulous Sinisters myself.
Same. Yeah.
But this guy is truly scary. He's my favorite villain on here because the other ones, no, maybe I should say he's my favorite villain because he's more fantastic. These other ones make me confront this whole secret sentinel thing and the Friends of Humanity, Executioner, yes. Trask. All of these represent a more real version of horror.
Yes.
Because these are all
humanity.
These are all, most of this behavior is lifted from just hundreds of years of modern recorded human behavior. We keep doing the same things as a species. Persecuting the other is a big one, and we're seeing it happen today before our eyes with a lot of the same rhetoric that the Friends of Humanity and things have been using. And that's probably a conscious choice by the show creators and writers to use the similar rhetoric and things to really draw people in today, really get people emotionally invested. But it works. And that's kind of what gives me pause, is because it works.
Yeah.
And it makes me feel those true feelings of trepidation, you know, from what same ones I feel from the news.
Well, to give credit where credit's due, I mean, this has always been a core tenet of X-Men, right?
Absolutely.
It's a lot of this, like,
anyone that says it's not is ridiculous.
They're confused. And X-Men doesn't have some new modern agenda. You know what I mean? That's actually another reason why I think the show is so good and powerful, Chris, is that it is sticking to the original X-Men guns and just showcasing more of what our world is, and just, you know, just saying the same things it's always been saying. I mean, it's kind of like I mentioned Star Trek earlier, but it's like when Star Trek first came out, a lot of people weren't getting it, what Star Trek was trying to say, right? What, like, that you're actually digesting sociological books when you're watching Star Trek, and that it's trying to tell you about how we can be a greater humanity and how we can do it. And no, this is bad over here. And people weren't quite getting all that. Maybe it was too smart, right? But then over time, people really got that with Star Trek, especially when it explored that lens through new stuff like The Next Generation. So I love that X-Men is doing what it's always done. It's just doing it, like you said, more tactfully. Like Forge's story is a good example of just more grace with handling certain characters, right? Even Remy, we talked about this. A lot of Southern Louisiana stereotypes very early on in his story, and like they eventually became more meshed into who he actually was. And you know what I mean? It's like when we're becoming less one note with all of our characters, then the characters are getting more real, but also getting more observant and truthful to modern life. Everyone is different. And the other thing you brought up earlier is always been a core tenet, especially when you go like, what is it? You said like 80s X-Men onward, right? Where it's just very much like they're trying to tell us something and it's not new, right?
It's Claremont that really brought that in.
100%. You know,
and this show and the X-Men 92, it's Claremont is all over it.
92 and 97, yeah.
Yes. I mean, it is Chris Claremont's X-Men, and this is the X-Men people have come to love. So
absolutely.
Nothing against the original six, but they were almost canceled until,
yes,
you know, just barely a comic. They had been doing reruns, literally running reruns for almost 100 issues until they gave the book to Chris Claremont, a young upstart. And, you know, the X-Men have become what the X-Men are.
Which is really important, because since Claremont took over in 75, I mean, X-Men's message and core everything has kind of been pretty consistent, right? And so
for the most part,
I aggressively push back, as you said, Chris, on those people that, I don't know what people might be claiming about the new series, but it's, you know, whatever it may be, some
everything,
whatever,
everything is charged these days just to keep us tired, man.
It is, you know, and I think this also gives a lot of points in Disney's camp too, because they really, I'm kind of shocked how consistent this is with 92 X-Men. And I'm not saying that good or bad. I'm just saying Disney usually, when they get properties, let's look at Star Wars, for example, they really want to inject a lot of new ideas and new things into it, which is great, but they also want to have their final say in everything. And sometimes if you just give it to a lot of the core people and you say, we're giving you guys the money, we'll oversee it, but we'll step back two steps, you get something like this.
The less decisions that are made in a boardroom about a particular piece of film or television, the better. Art is generally best when you're following a singular vision, and that just goes with most artistic endeavors. I've been in enough bands to know you don't write songs by committee.
Yeah, that's true.
You write songs and then you take it to a writer's room and everyone starts working on their parts. And things change, but the core structure was brought in too. And then everyone adds their voices, right?
Perfectly said. Yeah. Well, and it really speaks to the entire team behind this. I mean, you already mentioned about the director up front, but I mean, every episode is directed by a different director. Of course, there's multiple directors that are reoccurring. Like, for instance, a director named Chase Connolly did episode 2. We also did episode 4, right? But then you're spacing out with other directors in between. So very clearly, there's a shared vision here. You know, there's a shared vision that's really working. And, you know, a big part of that shared vision was bringing a lot of the original actors back and asking them if they wanted to return or not. And some deceased could not return. And so I'm just still in shock that we have not only such an accurate representation and return to X-Men 92, but in fact, something that just blows X-Men 92 out of the water.
This is such a better product than X-Men 92 was.
Yeah. And we can say that with all the realities, 30 years of improvements of animation, more money, not the timeline and deadlines that they had for 92, but the core of 92 is here. And the part that people love the most about 92 is here, that emotional core of the characters.
They're really there and it's really good. You should watch it.
You guys should absolutely watch it. And Chris, your thoughts on this final villain? Because we went on a tangent there, but all culminating to this villain of Bastion.
Yes, I have this is my only non-positive thought to this whole show.
Yeah.
The voice actor for Bastion drives me insane.
Just a personal preference thing.
It is. I don't like voice acting in animated shows where the actor is clearly whispering into a microphone.
Okay.
And it is being played to us as if that is his regular speaking voice or their regular speaking voice. There's something about my brain and hearing those mouth noises sends me into a blind rage. Like I'm a bull seeing a red cape. It's terrible.
Sounds like a sensory thing.
It 100% for sure. Is. And yeah. I know that it is a me thing, not a him thing, but goodness gracious, every time Bastion talks, I want to just pull my hair out.
So what do you think of them choosing Bastion?
Interesting. Good. This is a problem though.
Yeah.
There's not many X-Men villains left that haven't turned hero, because if a lot of the early villains are mutants, most of the mutants have been rehabilitated. So a lot of these other villains are going to be, for me, you know, Bolivar Trask, I think, is a great 90s villain for the X-Men, but we haven't really seen him much in the last however many years. He's just this guy that never leaves. No matter how many times it seems he's died, he comes back in some weird way and you see those round glasses and you know it's him.
Yeah.
Bastion, maybe this is where he makes his mark. Maybe this is a great way to give a new villain some pop culture gravitas, but I really wish they'd change the way they present the voice actor.
Totally fair there. But yeah, I'm very excited to see how this 3-episode finale goes coming up.
Yeah. And to be more fair to Bastion, he's only been around for an episode and a half pretty much at this point. So need more screen time to really get it.
But yeah, the 3-part finale is called Tolerance is Extinction. And yeah, we will be done with this in a couple weeks.
Couple clues there. Yeah. Could be an E is for extinction inspired event. We'll see.
Yep. And there was so much to talk about here that we did not talk on because that's
how good the show. Ton.
I mean, we didn't even talk about how like even some of the characters that are getting less screen time, just the way they're being characterized, like Dr. Hank McCoy, right? Like there's just layers of finesse in this show.
We didn't talk about Roberto's B plot. We didn't talk about the characterization of Jubilee. There's so much we haven't talked. There's so much with Morph I would like to talk about. We just can't.
We'll talk more on After Dark, and we're obviously going to return to this series very soon and close out this show with you guys and get prep for season two, hopefully in the future. But we'll at least we'll have this season one wrapped on Fury's Finest, you know, and really happy we got to do it this moment in time.
Me too. Didn't really expect to be able to return to this type of episode, maybe almost ever. And I'm really glad that this opportunity presented itself. I think X-Men 97 and Wolverine and Deadpool, I guess, was Loki season two any good? I still haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's really
maybe good. Maybe I'll try to watch
season one. Yeah.
Maybe I'll try to watch episode one tonight. But, you know, maybe we're in for a recapturing, a little bit of recapturing the feeling with the MCU. I don't expect it to really hit the heights that it did before, but it would be nice if we could have big enough movies and events in the MCU to warrant you and I doing more episodes like this.
Yeah, I'd love to talk Loki if you watch it. I mean, even if we do it on the After Dark, I was quite honestly very impressed. I mean, but you know, Loki season one was one of my favorite things they've ever done. So I feel like
I liked it. I didn't like it as much as you did, but I liked it.
I just like how separate from the MCU it was and how it was just a really well-written contained story. Mm-hmm. I know it's part of the MCU. I know the time stream and everything is important, but
The time stream concepts it introduces will play a major role whether or not, I mean, they're going to re-explain them and everything for the general movie-going audience though. So we'll see how much it really matters, but yes, it's done a lot of great things. I'll watch season two. Maybe I'll watch it while I paint. I got some Asgardians that need paint.
I mean, it's very deep, as you'd imagine. There's a lot there, right? There's a lot to unpack, a lot of great acting as well. Such a satisfying ending to that arc at the end of season two. They put a bow on it, it's done. And I don't know, I really enjoy really good writer-director combos writing those timey-wimey stories and making it work, actually. And Benson and Moorhead, the guys who led up Loki, that was their speciality. And so Disney hiring them, it was completely intentional. So it's the type of thing that I think it ended very well. And it's a great character show. And I feel like Tom Hiddleston, as you know, after watching season one, but he gives that like 110% that show. I mean, it's kind of insane. So
he is a bright shining spot.
Yeah. I mean, he's just as much the MCU as, you know, RDJ is at this point. Mm-hmm. It's like Loki is, they didn't even think it was going to happen. But it happened that way organically. Like he is one of the guys carrying the MCU forward or whatever it may be. But yeah, we'll return to this soon, hopefully, Chris. In the very least, we're going to return to X-Men and do our episode on the final three-part finale, and see how it goes.
I'm excited for it. Fury's Finest is supported by our wonderful patrons. You can become a Fury's Finest patron by going to patreon.com/ Fury's Finest.
Of course, you can find us everywhere online, several spaces, X, Fury's Finest Cast, Instagram, Facebook, and Twitch at Fury's Finest. Email us at furiousfinest@gmail.com. That's it.
Thanks to Approaching Nirvana for the show's music. Please rate, review, subscribe. It all means a lot. It all helps a lot. Spread the word about the show. If you think someone would enjoy this X-Men 97 talk and they're not into MCP, it's okay. Let them hear it.
I love these episodes. Chris knows this.
I do too.
I'm such a big film buff and all this stuff. And so every time we get to do these episodes, I just have a lot of fun. And it's been a while because I think to be honest, Chris, I think we kind of crushed the last Spider-Man and Multiverse of Madness episodes. Mm. And I think those were some of the last ones we did. And that's a while ago. And honestly,
there's been such a drop off.
Those are some of the best things in a while.
You know what we should
drop off since those.
What we should do is do the Into the Spider-Verse movies.
Part two.
That's what we should do.
Part one, part two. Yeah.
Let's do them together. Yeah. And then the MCU has some potentially good stuff coming too. So.
Oh, absolutely.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. If you guys enjoy this content, watch it, share it, listen to it.
Give us a reason to do more of these.
Yeah. If our numbers, if you guys like show that you like these, we'll continue to do them because we really enjoyed them in the past. It's just sometimes MCP continues to give and give and give and give, and it's hard to fit stuff in the schedule, but we can happen, and we can definitely make Deadpool 3 happen at some point in the future.
That's not a question. That's going to happen. So,
and maybe a return to the commentary series because we saw a couple of you guys were asked for that in the Discord.
Yeah, that was nice.
That was fun. So, well, of course, you can find Chris and I several spaces online. You can find me, Jesse, on all the same place at Jesse Aiken, JesseEaKin. And check out my Star Wars Shatterpoint show. Hello there, Star Wars Shatterpoint podcast, everywhere podcasts can be found. Chris, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on Discord. I am Strong Style, one word, Chris Finest in all MCP related Discords. And you can listen to me talk about the NBA on my NBA podcast, Orange Futures. It's the playoffs.
There it is.
Wow.
Wow. We hope you guys enjoyed this return to Marvel Universe content. We thank you guys for listening, and we hope you're watching X-Men alongside us. And we'll do part two of this episode very soon. Till next time, thanks for listening, true believers.
Excelsior.
The world has gotten even stranger than you already know.
At this point, I doubt anything would surprise me.
$10 says you're wrong.